Coming up on this week's episode, we're talking the FA Cup and the controversies around VAR in the Premier League. There's some Wonders of White, a quiz, and a Who Am I? So let's get started. Hello and welcome to a new episode of View from the Sideline podcast. It's Chris here, and Liam is here as well. Hello, Liam.
Evening, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. I mean, not in the FA Cup final, but
you're not. What could have been?
What could have been? Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a sec, aren't we? Just a lot happened this weekend. There didn't seem to be that many games, but it just seems a lot have happened.
Lots of drama
in the games. Yeah, well, especially in one of the games. But again, yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit later, but the FA Cup final, I guess, is set for Man United and Manchester City.
Yes.
And same, Manchester.
Same final 2 years in a row, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, what could have been? What could have been, eh?
Yeah. There's only one winner, isn't there?
Yeah. You know, after yesterday, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But we'll start at Chelsea versus Man City from Saturday. From my point of view, it was a rather frustrating game when you compare it to the 6-0 against Everton. We just couldn't score on Saturday.
Yeah,
I think we could have played a full another 90 minutes and not scored. I mean, we had so many chances.
Yeah.
And the chances that we did have, we just weren't taken. And just nothing just seemed to be sitting right for us. And I mean, Jackson.
Not his best game, was it?
I mean, you've got to say, you know, if you want to make yourself to be a top striker, he could have had a hat trick on Saturday.
Yeah.
And yeah, he just for some reason just didn't take those chances, and it ultimately cost us the game, really.
Yeah.
I felt that we had, up until they actually scored, we had the better, they had their chances, don't get me wrong, but we had more chances and probably easier ones to finish.
The highest rated comment on BBC just says Nicholas Jackson wouldn't score even if he was one on one with just the goalposts, which pretty much
says it all. Yeah, I mean, it just goes down to the age story of, it's been the same thing, I guess, for 2 years now. We just haven't got, you know, that number nine, a striker.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, we bought Jackson. We didn't buy him for that much. I think we bought him for about 30 million from Villarreal. He didn't have a great scoring record there. So I really don't know who was behind the deal to bring him in, but he's not the centre forward that we need. When you look sort of the centre forwards we've had that have worked in the last sort of 10 years, is Diego Costa being one of them and Drogba being the other. And one of their biggest attributes was strength.
Yeah.
And Jackson just doesn't seem to have anything like remotely the strength that those two had. I mean, he just gets taken off the ball so easily. He gives the ball away so much. And then when he does have these chances, you know, he just doesn't take them. And, you know, on another day, it could have been different. I think we might have won. And,
yeah,
you know, if we've played City three times this season, and we've drawn twice and lost once. And I felt in at least two of those games we should have won.
Yeah, wasn't that you played badly? Certainly not the game.
What I would say is we didn't revert back to how we've been playing this season.
Yeah.
Apart from the last 10 minutes, where for some strange reason we just stopped attacking all of a sudden and just started sitting back. I don't know if you noticed that at all in the game. Yeah, where
I think, I don't know whether it was tiredness, because really you shouldn't be certainly not more tired than Man City.
It just felt like that we had scored and we were holding on. And I really didn't understand the reasoning behind as to why all of a sudden from 80 minutes we just started sitting back. And I said, we're sitting back, we're going to end up conceding, because we were literally inviting them forward.
You can't do that against Man City.
And they brought Doku on and he came on and I thought he actually changed.
Yeah.
That how they went forward, and then we had to bring De Zerzi on for Gusto because he was injured, and De Zerzi, is a 6'3" centre back.
Yeah.
Pace isn't really his strong point, whereas Gusto was. He was able to keep up, with Doku for the time that he was on there. But yeah, I mean, I was a bit more hopeful because I saw Haaland wasn't in the team, and I thought that might take off their killer threat. A really weird decision to give Kevin De Bruyne a man of the match, by the way. I don't think
he did much.
There were a lot, I would say at least 6-7 Chelsea players better than De Bruyne on Saturday. Not necessarily saying they should have given it to a Chelsea player. But I thought Akanji, Ake, both had really good games. Bernardo Silva played well. I was really weird. I thought he was quite quiet on. He came off injured, didn't he, in midweek? So he was. I don't think he was 100% anyway. But.
I thought it was a strange City performance, actually. We're so used to them. I'm just looking at the stats now. They did have more possession than you, but they...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
...any team. But they were never particularly camped in your half, I thought. Yeah. You never, it's like you say, until the last 10 minutes, you never really sat off them and let them do what they've got to do, what a lot of teams do, and they stay compact. And
this is what's happened against City in the other two games in the league this season. They've never really threatened that much going forward. And
I would say
they are quite shaky at the back at times when you're running at them. If you've got pace up front, which we had a little bit of, it was causing them issues.
I thought it was City for me. Normally, it's controlled possession. They get into the final third, pass you to death until they find that one gap, and it's normally De Bruyne that picks out that one pass, Haaland or someone like that. But they seem to change it up a little bit. I thought they were trying to. It was like they'd identified your wing backs as the weak link. So a lot went through Grealish in the first half, and he didn't have his best game. He's not having his best season. I think that's been spoken about quite a lot. But a lot went through him in the first half. And like you say, when you brought Doku on, he had just that bit of explosive pace that Grealish didn't do anymore. He used to do it for Villa quite a lot, but he doesn't do it as much anymore. And that was what seemed to cause the problems, especially sort of towards the end. But yeah, it was a different Man City side. Mm. Maybe he was a bit wary because, like you said, you had two good draws against them earlier this season. Maybe he was a bit wary and wanted to change it up a little bit. But it was. I thought you were unlucky, to be fair.
Great
chances. I mean, I'm looking at the stats. You did have more shots on target. City had more shots, but there was quite a few times, I think, it wasn't necessarily, you were getting a shot away and it wasn't going in. But there was a few, counter-attacks and things like that where just the wrong pass got chosen or somebody made a wrong run.
There was at least three occasions. One, especially near towards the end, where Chilwell had the ball. And if he'd looked up and played early, Sterling was pretty much through.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things. And you know, the last thing I think I've got to say on it is the handball.
Yes.
With Grealish. It's a difficult one, but after seeing what happened yesterday with Wan-Bissaka, I wouldn't say that they are much different.
No.
In the position of the hand and what the hand was doing, I wouldn't say there's a lot of difference in there.
If anything, so, the ball's come a further distance to hit Grealish on the arm.
Yeah. So this is when I was watching the game yesterday, when it happened, I was thinking, well, they're not going to give this because literally 24 hours earlier, they decided not to give a very similar one. I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but a very similar decision not to give a penalty, but they did. And, you know, I guess it just goes down as inconsistency. But the Grealish one at first, I will say at first, I didn't think it was a penalty. But for some strange reason, ITV had a fascination with it and kept showing it to me. And the more I saw it, the more I was thinking, his hand, it's a difficult one, because when you're jumping, I guess, where are your hands going to go? But his hand is sticking out. And I mean, and then they didn't even get a corner from that either, which is just ludicrous. But I guess it's just one of those things.
Yeah, they're leaving it to the refs now, aren't they? And I think if the ref had given the Grealish handball, VAR's overturning.
You're right. I think if the official decision was penalty, I think we would have got the penalty, but I didn't see much difference between the two handballs.
We've been saying it for 4-5 years now. It's where clear and obvious comes in. So it's not a clear and obvious error to award a penalty in your instance. Yeah. It's not a clear and obvious miss of a handball.
Yeah. Do you think if he hadn't have given the penalty and it went to VAR, they wouldn't have given it, would they?
They wouldn't have given it. Yeah. But that says to me that you now need to start bringing in a better way of using VAR that says, well, we're not going to use it for handballs. You know, because they keep on repeating clear and obvious, but there's so many different interpretations of the handball rule. Nothing can ever be clear and obvious. So don't use it. Unless you punch the ball into the back of the net, don't use it at all, you know?
I just think if your hands are down by your sides, you're safe. If they're if you're doing jazz hands, then you know, you're going to get penalised for it. But that was my only thing I would say, is that his hands weren't... I wouldn't say his hands were in a natural position for jumping, but... You know, Man City fans will just say, oh, you're just a sore Chelsea fan. And I'm sure Man City have got their own interpretation of that. But when it happens to them on the last day of the season and they're, you know, they're 1-1 and they're just about to lose the title, I'll remind them of the time that it happened. But, you know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? And we'll get it, you know, tomorrow we'll play Arsenal and the same thing will happen and we'll get a penalty. So, I mean, I'm not hopeful for tomorrow night, if I'm completely honest.
I mean, Arsenal are easy.
You'd say that you're fourth in the league. We're trying to fight. The only thing about tomorrow is if we do win, we'll actually go above Man United.
Yeah.
Because for some strange reason, we've got 3 games in hand on West Ham as well, who are just above us.
Yeah.
And I did see, I can't remember if it was BBC or Sky Sports today, they were showing battle for sixth or something, and it was like Newcastle, Chelsea and Man United, and it was like their run-ins.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, blimey, they're hopeful, aren't they? I said, have they not seen our next 3 league games?
It's another one of those weird ways it worked out. I touched on it a little bit last week about... some teams are going to play sort of 3 games more than others. And I was looking, because in my fantasy league, I've got Son in my team fantasy league, and I was thinking, Spurs haven't got a game this week. I've put him on the bench.
Yeah.
How come they've not got a game? And Villa, bear in mind we're in Europe, So, I understand that we'll play a Conference League game, whereas Spurs won't play a midweek game. But we'll have played four matches in between the last two times Spurs have played. And that, to me, doesn't seem very fair.
Yeah, because we're catching up now, because we're playing tomorrow night, then we're playing you on Saturday. For some reason, we're playing Saturday at 8 o'clock, which is really strange. The only thing I can think of is why it's been put back is because the Women's Champions League match is on before that, so I don't know whether they're trying to get more people interested in that.
Yeah,
possibly. So they've moved it forward. I don't know. And then we're playing midweek again next week against our actual game in hand against Tottenham. Yeah. We're trying to do you a favour there, but I can't. I ain't going to guarantee you anything.
But yeah, that's the. By the time Spurs next play a game, they'll have three games in hand over us.
I did notice that when I was looking for Spurs fixture. I was like, they're not playing midweek either. I was like, when are they actually playing their next game?
Yeah.
So they're going to be nice and refreshed, but I still think you've got enough for fourth, so I don't think you should worry too much about Tottenham, if I'm honest.
Because they've got you guys, they've got City, they've got Liverpool, and they've got Arsenal, I think. Liverpool and Arsenal. I was looking, I think, another 3 points, and we're almost there, I think. Make it certain, I think, we need to get 6 points from our last fixtures, and we've got...
Okay, well, if you need 6 points to let us win on... Okay, if you let us win on Saturday, we'll beat Tottenham on Thursday. Because that would really suit me. And I know it doesn't completely suit you, but we're kind of doing you a favour for doing us a favour.
Yeah, I mean, are you playing Spurs before you play us, or are you playing us
first? No, we're playing Spurs next Thursday, so we play you first.
We've got
Arsenal tomorrow night, and then we got you on, I'm assuming that's away, that's at Villa Park, isn't it?
Yeah.
Saturday, yeah, because we're at home to Tottenham on Thursday.
If not, the Spurs could just lose.
I'll tell you what, even a draw, I'd take a draw at Villa Park.
Okay,
then we'll beat Tottenham for you.
Yeah, as long as you beat Spurs, I'm fine with that.
Deal. Right, I'll get on the phone. we'll move on to the other semi final yesterday. Hilarious. If I'm going to... I think that it's probably one of... Even though they didn't win, right? Probably one of the comebacks of the season to be 3-0 down to Manchester United and come back to 3-3. It's up there with Man United losing to Chelsea in the 99th minute. And it's hilarious the amount of videos I've seen. I saw a video, right, online today of a Coventry fan on the train home, right, after his team had come 3-0 down. He was on the train and he filmed himself and he'd gone. He was already on the train.
Never leave.
No. I mean, the game itself was, first half was so, it was very one-sided.
Yeah.
Coventry looked very nervous, I felt, in the first half.
Yeah.
I almost feel like them going 3-0 down, it just, for some reason, just really kicked on.
Yeah, they had nothing to lose. I mean, because United scored so early, I thought that's just the worst thing that could happen because...
It knocked them. You could tell it.
Heads are going to drop, and for the rest of the first half, you know, it seemed that way. It was more like, how many are United going to get? And then, obviously, 2-0 just before half-time, and I think everybody in the studio was thinking, game over here. But to come back in the way they did, they got a big slice of luck, obviously, with the second goal, because it was a huge deflection. But you've got to say, from the time the third goal went in until full-time and extra time,
they looked like they had scored. As I say, they looked like the one team that were going to go on.
I mean, United hit the bar. I know United hit the bar in extra time, but so did Coventry. But
That Sims guy, in normal time, he looked like he was treading water from about the 80th minute. And I thought to myself, he ain't going to be able to continue. But they ended up getting a few injuries, didn't they? So they had to end up using their subs on other things. But, you know, I guess it's kind of the magic of the FA Cup, isn't it? It's kind of like it's one of those things where, you know, some of those Coventry fans, you know, to them, it's almost like a win, I would say, because, you know, to get that far anyway in the competition, you know, that's some going. And, you know, penalties is the worst way to lose a game. And, you know, unfortunately, they didn't, you know, take the chances that they...
Well, they did. I mean, they did, didn't they? In the last kick of the game, they did take the chance, but it's offside by millimetres. And there's even a debate on whether they took it from the right frame or whether it's, you know, one frame back or whether the lines are drawn properly, because I've seen people say the line's going over the United defender's foot. All this just kind of makes me, again... Clear and obvious, guys.
Do you know one thing that really annoyed me? I don't know if you've seen it. Did you see Anthony's celebration after the penalties?
He's
a knob, isn't he? What are you thinking, right? You've barely scraped through against Coventry and he's done that. It's just... Yeah. I think it just shows on what sort of character he probably is, if I'm honest. But
the rift in the Man United team at the moment just came through at that split second. So as Anthony's cupping his ears and giving it the big what for to all the Coventry players, Harry Maguire isn't even celebrating. He's gone over to the Coventry players and he's
I don't know if you heard his interview after the game. He said that they could have won it and probably should have won it. He was just being honest, because I think he knows full well that they were 3-0 up and they were comfortable, and you know they've thrown away a free goal lead, pretty much a free goal lead. You know, they have gone through, but. I mean, it's not the first time they've done that, is it, really? When you think about when they only played Chelsea, 2 weeks ago, and they did exactly the same there.
Yeah.
So, something isn't right there.
No.
Just
goes to show that all the sticks that he got from United fans, you know, from just football fans in general, Maguire's... I loved his interview. I thought it was great that he was so honest.
He was just honest. I think he was just being honest, because he knew. I don't think there's any hide. There's no pointing him coming out after the game and saying we were the better side, we deserve to go through, because people just looked at him and just thought,
yeah,
you stupid. Yeah. The funny thing was, although they conceded 3 goals yesterday, he was probably one of their best players on that pitch.
Yeah, I didn't think he had a bad game at all.
Even at 3-2, he put in a few good tackles.
Yeah.
I mean, Casemiro, his legs were gone after about 70 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah.
I think he'll be gone at the end of the season. I don't think they'll keep him. But there didn't seem to be a lot of fight in that team.
No.
In extra time. I understand extra time. They've played 90 minutes already. They're probably tired. But you just felt when Man United were going forward with the ball, it was just very slow.
Yeah.
Very lethargic. Very, like, the passing wasn't quite there. Eriksen, he's looking more and more like Ten Hag every time I see him. I mean,
he's lost the hair now.
I know he's old. Don't get me wrong. I know he's old. I know they've got injury problems. Everyone else does. But yeah, I just think the sort of 60 minutes onwards yesterday, I thought it really showed that there's something fundamentally not right within there. I mean, I get the feeling that they ain't going to stick with Ten Hag much longer. I feel like this guy that's come in, what's his name, Jim?
Yeah, Rack, yeah.
I don't think, he's probably got different plans. I don't see him. Because I don't know where they go from here, because their team feels like it's really depleted at the moment.
Yeah.
Doesn't feel like they're bringing anyone in. They spent a lot of money on just a couple of players that, I mean, Anthony, didn't he get his first assist of the season like about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah. He's not done much. Yeah.
I mean, he's not exactly. I know, look, I'm a fine one to talk, right? We spent a lot of money on a lot of players. But even Mudrick's assisted more than he has this season. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, you know, just the character. But I felt sorry for Coventry because I felt that they deserved better than to go out on penalties.
It's almost like...
Just the final, I think, for them. They wouldn't have beaten that. Well...
You never know.
You can't say never, say never. You never say never, do you? But you'd have to say it's unlikely that they would go on to win it, but, you know, just to get to the final. But you have to think to yourself, like, you know, if they put in that much effort in the last 30 minutes against Man United,
yeah,
how are they not in, you know, that sort of top six in the championship? But I think, you know...
Alternatively, you know, I love a football conspiracy theory. We all know that Neymar's always suspended at a certain time of year, that kind of thing.
All right, yeah.
Did the Man United players think, oh, actually, if we go and win this, Ten Hag might stay another year? Maybe we just make it look a little bit more difficult. And maybe it was, yeah.
I do think to myself...
We've seen it before. We've seen teams that haven't liked managers and they've just decided that they're going to stop playing and... Yeah.
When I see him on the touchline, I do think to myself, what is he actually thinking? And then I look slightly to the right and I see Steve McLaren sat next to him, I think. No wonder they're in so much trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're getting advice from him, then, yeah, I mean, yeah, there's something not quite right. He must be laughing, Steve McLaren, that he's there.
Yeah, getting
paid a ridiculous amount. So, I just wanted to touch one more thing on the FA Cup as a whole. Obviously, since we last spoke, they've scrapped replays.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of clubs that have come out and said, you know, about, you know, how much financially this actually helps them. But interestingly, I saw Yeovil Town have written to the FA, and they actually published what they writ, and inside they've actually got a few facts and figures, I guess, of around, you know, the FA Cup.
Yeah.
So, according to a financial study, I guess that it names a company, I guess they're like a financial studies company or something, but apparently in 2010-2011... 70% of Havant and Waterloo's revenue came from the FA Cup.
Yeah, they got that year. Around that year, didn't
that
they?
Was when they played Liverpool.
Yeah.
And it says in 2010-2011, 12 of the replays were televised, which accumulated in about 1.7 million in broadcast fees for those clubs.
Yeah.
And it sort of breaks it down. So in 2003, Millwall generated an additional £300,000 for television receipts for a replay.
Yeah.
In 2005-2006 season, Burton Albion made an extra £500,000 just for a replay against Man United alongside a £200,000 television payment.
Yeah.
And then Leighton Orient in 2010, when they played Arsenal, generated another £500,000 when they took a home fixture against Arsenal.
Yeah, and you've got to look more recently. Obviously, Lincoln got to, was it the quarterfinals?
Final, yeah.
A few years ago, and they were in the National League at the time. They're now in League One. A lot of that is going to be funded by that run in the FA Cup. Stevenage obviously famously had a few giant killings when they were in the National League. They obviously built the foundation. Now they're an established football league club.
Last year, didn't they?
Yeah, there's so many examples. Yeah, we've glossed over that one quick. just examples of, you know, either lower league clubs or non-league clubs having a good run and putting that money to good use, you know, and creating the foundation for them to get promoted.
There really is no point having a vote with just a Premier League, with just people from the Premier League, because they're going to vote against replays because it just congests things. Yeah. And am I right? This has probably all come to light because of the new format of the European competitions, isn't
it?
Yeah, I think so. Because they're playing additional games in Europe now. You can't really call, what are we going to call it now? Because it's not a group stage, is it? Because there's
it's just one group. Just a league.
So is it like a table? League table? So the league table for the new format of the Champions League is going to require you to play 8 games instead of 6.
Yeah.
And I believe that 2 of those games are after January. So I think you play 1 mid-January and 1 towards the end of January.
So just,
and they are pegged in for replays, I think, normally.
Right. So obviously, the FA, UEFA, whoever's making these decisions, they all want more games, because more games means more revenue.
Yeah.
However, the teams want less games, less congested fixtures, because they want to rest their players. So to me, the obvious solution, and I think I said it on maybe last season's podcast, more teams in the Football League. 5 divisions, 20 teams in each division. You're playing less games, but there's more games throughout the season.
Yeah.
Makes more sense to me. And then you can, the League Cup, just make the League Cup between the top 2 divisions, 40 teams, that's it. And then divisions, League 1, League 2 and League 3, if we're going to create a League 3, they can have the, Bristol Street Motors, whatever it is this year, FA Trophy, or that's just the League Trophy, isn't it, or whatever it's called now. They can have that competition. The League Cup can just be 40 teams, so you play much less games than that. Keep your FA Cup replays. You've got more games in the Champions League, but you have less games in the season. It just makes so much more sense.
Why are they having to scrap? If they've decided to put in more games in Europe, I don't understand why other teams in lower leagues should be affected by that. Just make them do what Liverpool had to do. What was it, last year?
Yeah, their 18 team out, because they played.
They had to play like a reserve. That was against you.
They played a reserve team against us, and we had to play a reserve team against them.
Yeah, so if they're playing, if they've got a Champions League game on the Tuesday or the Wednesday, make the FA Cup replay on a Thursday, and if they, if they have to field a team of youngsters against, Morecambe, they're going to have to.
Yeah.
I don't see why the teams in lower leagues should they're not benefiting from anything, are they? I've seen they're going to give more money to grassroots football, but that, they're not going to see any of that, are they? I don't know. We'll have to see. I feel like that it's not going to be changed. I feel like that what they've done, they're not going to go back on it now. But it's a shame for those sorts of teams, that do go on a cup run, that are going to have to just end up playing extra time penalties again. So, it doesn't really benefit them whatsoever. So, they're not going to see more money from that.
They play more games because they've got 46 games a season as opposed to 38 in the league. They play more games than the majority of the Premier League clubs.
Yeah.
You take cup competitions because they're in the FA Cup. If you're in League 1 and League 2, you're in the FA Cup from round 1. Yeah, exactly. So they're playing probably consistently nearly 60 games a season, whereas unless you get a good run in Europe and in a cup competition in the Premier League, you're probably not playing 50.
Remember, I don't know, this is probably a long time ago, but you probably remember it. Remember when Man United didn't enter into the FA Cup because they were playing in the,
the World Club Cup,
weren't they?
Yeah, I remember because we played them that year. We actually beat them. It was one of the only times that we'd beaten Man United.
They didn't play in the FA Cup, did they? They opted out of it, didn't they?
They played a reserve team, I guess. I remember like David Healy played that day, and a couple of like reserve players, I suppose. Got a young team out against us that day and lost.
Because they did
drop out of the league altogether, I think.
The more I think about it, what you're going to have, this only really is going to affect eight teams, nine teams at the most. In the Premier League, surely, because there's only going to be seven or eight teams in Europe.
Yeah.
So surely the other, like the teams like Forest, Everton and stuff, replays aren't going to be the be-all and end-all, surely, because they're not in Europe anyway.
I think it would mean a lot for a Premier League club to come out and say, we'd quite like to keep FA Cup replays. Because I think if we had one of the bigger teams that were back in the sort of League One, League Two clubs that are coming out and making these statements, I think it might have a bit more sway. It shouldn't be like that, but
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll move on to, I guess, our last talking point, which is an also game yesterday. But I mean, this was just marred with controversies from start to finish.
Yeah.
I will say this, I don't think I've seen that many decisions from VAR where I've felt that they've got it wrong in one game. But what I will say is the statement that Forrest came out with after just felt a bit, I don't know how to put it, it felt silly that they've done that, and I can't quite understand why so soon after the game they've actually released a statement. You'd think that they'd want to, look back on everything first.
Yeah.
You know, I think everyone knows, apart from Everton fans, that they probably got cheated out of a few decisions there. But what I will say is that Everton were by far the better team.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure even if those decisions had been given, they would have got anything from the game.
No, I mean, if anyone hasn't seen them, go ahead and have a look. I personally, the last one of the three is one of the most obvious penalties you'll see all season.
I would say two of the three, for me, were definite decisions that went against them that should have.
Yeah.
And maybe, I think it was the first one, not as clear, but I would say,
definitely made contact with him.
The last one
is clear. He's gone through the back of the player. He's not touched the ball.
It was Hudson-Odoi, wasn't it? It's at the front of that one.
And the referee as well, they highlighted it on Match of the Day. The referee
said where he was.
He makes the signal with his hands to say he's got the ball. When he very clearly hadn't, and replay showed that he didn't, and VAR took a look at it, and rather than say, we know you think he's got the ball, but he hasn't, they just, we don't know what they've said, they've requested the audio. So it'd be interesting to see what...
I would 100% that say that is a clear and obvious mistake by the referee.
Yeah, yeah.
We've literally just spoken about this, you know, 20 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But about the clear and obvious thing.
The handball, was it a handball, the second one?
Yeah.
That looked quite an obvious one.
Ashley Young. He was bearing the brunt of the decisions yesterday.
All three.
Yeah. And he wouldn't have been on the pitch, I don't think, had the decision. But can't really take anything away from Everton. I mean, they, you know, after what happened on last Monday night, to lose 6-0,
yeah,
against a mediocre mid-table team, it could have knocked their confidence.
Yeah.
I mean, they defended 1,000 times better, even though Ashley had to use his hands and his feet at times, which he shouldn't have. But I personally, even if I think if they'd given two of them, I still think they wouldn't have won it. I still think Everton would have gone on and won it anyway. And I feel like the statement after I mean,
it doesn't really.
I know. Look, they're angry. I get it. They're angry, but they're only going to get themselves into trouble, more trouble than what they're already in, because they've already been dot points.
I'd just like to know how that's happened. So it came out within an hour of full time, I'd say.
They were still talking on Sky Sports.
Yeah. So
it couldn't have been more than 20, 30 minutes, I reckon.
But that official statement from the club has obviously got to come from a spokesperson for the club, or it's got to come from the chairman or the...
I would have thought it's come from the chairman, and he said you need put it out, yeah.
So he's clearly just watched the game and is just so angry. He's obviously just sent a WhatsApp message or something to the social media manager and just gone, I want you to post this. Just out of sheer spite. And that's what's ended up going online. At no point did anybody say, well, maybe we should hang on a moment.
Just hold off. Yeah, just hold off for like a couple of hours. So we can calm down. I know you're angry. Look, we understand you're angry. Things have gone against clubs all year with VAR. Yeah. Not one of them has yet to come out with a statement 20 minutes after the game condemning VAR quite critically, and to say that that they'd asked for the was it the fourth official? No,
the
VAR, wouldn't it? Yeah. He shouldn't be doing the game because he's a Luton fan.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think Luton got much to gain out of either of these ones, either of the teams winning anyway. And in fact, probably if Forest had actually won, it would probably benefit Luton more if Forest had won, because it would have sucked Everton back into that sort of...
would have kept everybody down.
But I have heard today that apparently they didn't say, they didn't ask for the VAR person to be changed. So I think there's been some cross wires. I think basically the chairman has just been so furious. He's just written everything down. Maybe if it's not even 100% accurate, and he's just blown his top. And
well, there's a member of the Everton backroom staff now going, "Oh yeah, I left that email in drafts. I probably should have sent that." And they haven't contacted the FA, and he's just lied and said, yeah, I did send that email off to the PGMOL to say we need that referee removed, and it's just not happened. But I can't, that's where it gets even weirder, to come out and actively say we contacted the PGMOL about this, and we submitted it, and we were told no. For them to come out and say no one actually contacted us about anything. Yeah,
and I think it's just in the moment. I think someone's just flipped, and instead of just going, sitting down, having a glass of water, and calming down,
he's
just gone straight to his computer and just literally started typing. And then, just like you said, sent it to the social media manager and just said, you need to post this. The social media manager is probably looking at it thinking, I'm not so sure about this.
And for the rest of the season, right, and this is what really confused me. You've got four games left. They're a point clear, right? And I know they're annoyed that they've been deducted a couple of points. And I get that, you know, fine. But there's four games left, and we've seen it so many times. I mean, it was at Watford a few years ago that sacked their manager with like three games left when they looked like they were about to stay up, like made a rash decision, ended up getting relegated.
Yeah.
Remember the ostrich comment from
Pearson in a
press conference? Didn't do well. Well, I suppose it did do good for Leicester because they did stay up that year, just about. But what a time of year to be. What are the Forest players thinking now, and what are the Luton players thinking? Because if I was in the Luton team, I'd be going, they're rattled. They're not
going
to game this season. We've got a chance of staying up here. And if I was a Forest player, I'd be thinking, bloody hell, if my chairman are going to be making statements like that, when we've already been deducted points, we're at risk of fines or you know, further points deductions. I don't think I particularly enjoy that.
Just what they need for their accounts is another hefty fine as well, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Putting them more in the red and be susceptible to more points deductions is just what they need. But
yeah,
yeah, I think. The problem is there's no going back now. It's done.
It's done.
But yeah, I mean, I understand, but probably a time and a place. Probably a few days after the game, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably have some thought put into the statement.
Yeah.
Rather than just accusing everyone.
Yeah. Make it privately, you know.
Yeah.
I'm looking at fixtures ahead of them now. With the win for Burnley this weekend, they're now 3 points behind Forest, and it's Burnley Forest last game of the season, and that is going to be huge potentially. Because Burnley are on a decent run now.
Yeah,
I know they've drawn a few games, but they've only lost one of the last five. Their goal difference is massively in favour of Forest, I've got to say. But still, you know, Burnley pick up.
Maybe we'll get another statement from Forrest at the end of the season when they get relegated.
Yeah. The fourth official's nan is a Burnley fan. We don't like that.
Anyway, that's the end of part one. We'll be back in part two with some Wonders of White, a quiz, and a Who Am I? Hello and welcome back to part two of this week's episode. We're going to go into your favourite, Liam, the Wonders of White.
Yes.
Okay, so first up is about our old friend Ryan Gravenberch.
Yes, Ajax legend.
The FM legend. Ryan Gravenberch's goal, assisted by Harvey Elliott, was the first time Liverpool had a Premier League goal, both scored and assisted by players aged 21 or younger. Last time they did that was against Chelsea in November 2014, and that was Emre Can assisting Raheem Sterling.
Wow. I was about to say that's not that long ago, but actually that is 10 years ago.
It is 10 years ago, yeah. They're both in their 30s now. Next one, Luis Suarez assist for Lionel Messi on Saturday was the 50th time he's assisted a goal for Lionel Messi.
Wow. Different. They're in a different league now, though, aren't they, to be fair? So, you know, it's not La Liga.
They should be walking that league, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, they probably are. I mean, to be fair, they're both late 30s now, aren't they? So, they probably are walking.
Manchester City's unbeaten in the last 29 matches in all competitions, which is the longest in their club's history.
Wow.
I mean, they've won 23 of their last 29 and drawn 6.
Who were the last team to beat them, Chris? Do you know? Just off the...
Probably you, I expect.
Yeah, that's what we like to hear, yeah.
But start of the season, does that mean? Yeah, because they would have played...
Just before Christmas, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, blimey, they've played 29 games. Blimey.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. We're both in the mud for this one, by the way. Because I chose this one because both of our names are in here. So Sheffield United have become just the third team in history to concede 50-plus goals at home in an English top-flight season. Can you name me the other two?
The other two?
Yeah.
One of them has got to be Villa, then.
Yeah. You hold the record for 56 goals at home in a season.
That was a terrible season. Mika Rick keeps laughing about that season on podcast. I'm like, that's no laughing matter, Big Meeks. Come on.
Chelsea also did it as well. Bang on 50. In the 59-60 season.
Oh, we're going quite a long way back for that. Fair enough.
Okay, that's it. That's your lot.
Nice. Well, I'd like to bring Villa down a peg or two. Just, you know, remember where we were.
I've not finished yet.
Okay.
Quiz time.
Oh, let me guess, there's a question about the 8-0.
So, this week, with the whole theme of the FA Cup, I've had a look back at some giant killings throughout the last 20 to 30 years, should we say.
We've had a few of them. Yeah, okay.
You might be on this.
Okay, we can see where this is going, yeah.
Just the once.
Okay.
But just because I'm not a biased person, I have also put Chelsea one on here as well, okay?
Fair.
So, first question. Jermaine Beckford scored the only goal for Leeds in their 1-0 victory in 2010 over which Premier League club?
That was Manchester United.
It was.
I remember that well.
I think everyone kind of remembers that goal.
Yeah, it's one of those slow motion trickle over the line. Brilliant to watch all the Man United fans in the crowd just slowly lose it.
Next one. This is the one you'll like. Stevenage.
Yeah.
This is the reason I knew why when you said Stevenage earlier.
I knew.
Okay, so Stevenage beat Aston Villa 2-1 in 2023. But can you remember which Villa player got sent off that day?
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say, can you remember who scored that day? Because I think it was Morgan Sanson's only goal for Villa. Did he get sent off as well? Maybe he did. I'm going to go with Morgan Sanson. I don't know who else it would have been.
It wasn't Sanson. It was Dendonka.
No, wouldn't have got there.
Next one. Wrexham famously beat Arsenal 2-1 in 1992. But can you tell me at what ground did they do that at?
Oh. It's either going to be at the racecourse ground or at Highbury. I'm going to say they beat Arsenal in their own back garden, and I'm going to say it was Highbury.
It was the other way round.
Oh.
It was the racecourse.
Ah, gutted.
Okay, so this next one is on every single montage of FA Cup goals, I'm telling you now. Ronnie Radford, ever heard of him?
Yeah.
I hope you have.
Yeah.
So his wonder strike for Hereford against Newcastle in 1972, where Hereford ended up winning the game 2-1. Was that goal their first goal or the second goal?
Ooh.
So was that goal the winner or was it the equaliser?
Probably the winner, surely. The fans came on the pitch after. I'm going it was the winner.
It wasn't.
No.
It was the first goal and it took it to extra time. That's the reason they ran on the pitch.
Tricky. Tricky quiz this week.
Sorry, yeah. Okay, next one. Who was the Everton manager in 2003 when they lost to Shrewsbury in the third round?
Oh, that would have to be Moyes.
It was Moyes.
Yeah.
I see they've come out today and said that they're going to look at his future come the end of the season, which is pretty harsh.
Yeah, it is harsh, isn't it?
Burnley defeated Liverpool in a shock 1-0 win in 2005.
Yeah.
This was actually Rafa's first ever FA Cup game, by the way. In charge of Liverpool. Yeah, and he lost. On the day, the only goal was scored. It was an own goal. Which Liverpool player scored that own goal? I'm not going to be horrible.
I've got
a choice of four, okay?
I think I know it, but go on. Make it easier for me.
Hang on. Who was the one that... Just give me the first letter of the name.
First letter of their first name?
Surname.
T.
Yeah, say it.
Jimmy Traore.
It was Jimmy Traore, yeah. Your choices were going to be Sammy Hupia, Jimmy Traore, Steven Gerrard or Vladimir Smicha.
Yeah, it's the best own goals that you'll... It's just one of the funny ones. Like, it would be on all the bloopers at the end of the year. Lovely, lovely. Couldn't get his feet sore.
It would be on David Seaman's Goals and Gaffes.
Yes, absolutely.
Why were they all called Goals and Gaffes? I swear everyone had one called Goals and Gaffes.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Plenty.
Okay. This one you met... this is probably quite hard. This is probably quite a harsh one, actually. Michael Flynn. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, he's the...
Okay, so yeah. He is... So his Newport side knocked out Leicester in the third round in 2019.
Yeah.
But which EFL side was he sacked from in January of this year?
He was, because I still occasionally catch Midlands today, I think he was at Walsall. I think.
No.
No?
No. I'll give you another guess.
Okay.
It's a team in Wiltshire.
Swindon?
It is Swindon, yeah. I'll give you that, because that was quite a difficult one. He was at Walsall before Swindon.
That's where I've got that from.
He didn't last very long at Swindon.
Yeah.
Weirdly, they gave him a new contract, and then he went 10 games without a win, and they ended up sacking him. okay.
Brilliant.
The next two are just quite funny, really. 1991, Woking beat West Brom 4-2 away as well. At the time, Woking were in the Ishmans League.
Yeah.
And there on the day, their hat-trick hero was a guy called Tim Buzzerglow. He was a part-time computer specialist, but... Oh. He was also a former sportsman in another sport for Gibraltar.
Nice.
What other sport did he compete in?
Oh.
For Gibraltar.
Gibraltar. So is it like an Olympic sport? Am I allowed to know?
No, it's played on a field.
Okay. There's a lot that's played on the field now. I was about to jump in and say it's either...
It's a team sport on a field.
I'm going to guess it's cricket.
It is cricket. Yeah, he was a cricketer.
There's a lot of cricketers that play football in winter, so, yeah.
I did Wikipedia him, and there wasn't much on... He has a Wikipedia page, but he has more on his Wikipedia page about cricket than he does about football. So I can only assume... Even though he scored a hat-trick against West Brom in 1991, he was probably a better cricketer than he was a footballer.
Tim Buzzerglow, yeah.
The next one is similar. So this is Sutton United in 1989, beat Coventry 2-1. So this is 18 months after Coventry had won the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Sutton were managed by, at the time, by a man called Barry Williams. Very strong name.
Solid.
Sutton were also a part-time team, so Barry had a normal job. He was a teacher. What did he teach? I'm going to give you a clue. Was it English, maths, or science?
Oh. I am going to go, Barry Williams sounds like a science teacher.
He was an English teacher.
Ah, oh, close.
Good old Barry.
Fair play to him. That's the joy of the FA Cup, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't tend to happen a lot these days, does it? I mean, you get to see part-time electricians on the TV sometimes, don't you?
Yeah.
Normally in the first round when they're showing Blyth Spartans versus Cheltenham Town.
Yeah.
And half of Blyth's team are, I've got normal, like, 9-to-5 jobs. Lastly but not least, I couldn't go a whole quiz without putting my own team down. So 2015, Liam.
Yeah.
Chelsea lost at home to Bradford.
Yeah, I remember that well.
4-2. Can you name me guy that scored the first Bradford goal?
Was it John Stead?
It was John Stead.
He did
score
that. What a player it was. What a player John Stead was.
I Wikipedia'd him. He has played for a lot of teams.
He's played for a lot. Yeah, he's a not there. Who am I? We'd be here all day.
No, yeah. He's probably one of the longest Wikipedia pages I've seen for clubs.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was John Stead. Okay, so one. 4, 5. You got 6 out of 10.
Not bad. Not bad. That was tough this week. I enjoyed that.
And we all learnt a few things, you know?
Yeah, we did. About Barry Williams, mostly.
Barry Williams and Tim Buzzaglow. I'm probably murdering that guy's name. Poor guy. But a famous cricketer in Gibraltar.
Yeah. It also says that he worked as an estate agent for Mann and Co.
I did see that, yeah. I don't know if he's still there.
We don't know, but that's...
If anyone is in Mann and Co. estate agents... And you see a man with a little hat-trick trophy on his desk, one of those like cheap trophies, just a boot.
Yeah,
he got that in the FA Cup third round in 1991. So yeah,
cool. Let's do a who am I to end the podcast this week, and we've just spoken about John Stead because he's got quite a
Stead.
It's not John Stead.
Oh.
There's quite a few clubs in his career, and this person also has quite a few clubs as well.
Do I need a pen and paper for this
one? You don't need a pen and paper. So I'm going to tell you now, he's got 10 clubs. He's retired. He's got 10 clubs in his career. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through each club one by one, and then if you get it on the first club, which I don't think you will, I'll give you 10 points.
That's a miracle.
Exactly. So I expect that probably by club number four or five, I think might be fairly obvious, but let's see if you can get it a bit sooner than that. So are you ready, Chris?
Yeah, go for it.
Club number one, which I'm hoping doesn't give it away, is Stafford Rangers.
Oh my word. John Stead.
It is not John Stead.
Damn it.
Any guesses other than John Stead? I'll let you have a few.
Barry Williams.
It's not Barry Williams either, unfortunately. Would you like club number two?
Yeah, go on.
Club number two is Crystal Palace.
That may help me either, if I'm honest.
No.
So
I can't imagine many made the move from Stafford Rangers to Crystal Palace.
Not many, yeah. Because I can only think about Crystal Palace players that play there now.
Okay.
Mateta.
Yeah, came through the ranks at Stafford Rangers. Yeah.
He plays like he does.
Club number three?
Yeah.
Club number three is Southend United.
Oh, blimey. Hang on, are any of these loans?
No.
That's really... He's retired, yeah?
He is retired. He's got one loan, but it's later on in his career. I don't think we'll need to get that far, to be honest.
Keep going.
Okay, club number four is Nottingham Forest.
I mean, if he's been retired for a long time, I'm not going to know. Carry on.
Club number five, Liverpool.
Forest, Liverpool. Thing is, I'm thinking he must be English. I mean, I can't imagine there's English player that played. Go one more.
One more.
Yeah. So
the next club he plays for. Aston Villa.
Interesting. Forest to Liverpool to Villa.
The next move is his loan move. But I won't give you the club.
This is hard. I'm stump. It's definitely not Patrick Berger, because that's where my head's going. I'm thinking, it could be Patrick Berger. I really don't think he started at Stafford. He's definitely going to be English.
He is English.
If I think around... my mind has gone blank.
What I can do is I can either carry on and give you the next few clubs.
Yeah. But
if I'm being honest, Chris, they don't help that much. What might help is by narrowing down the years that he played.
Just give me like the year that he moved from Liverpool to Villa.
1997.
Oh, so this predates loads of English players that I was thinking. Heskey was going on in my head as well. Yeah. Would I be right in thinking he made that move?
We got him from Wigan. I think he played for a couple of clubs in between.
The only other...
We're on too many others.
Oh, Forrest as well. Hang on.
Penny dropped.
Yeah. Collymore?
Stan Collymore? Correct. It is indeed. So he didn't play much after his time with Villa, so he did go on loan to Fulham.
He played for Bradford, didn't he, for like about three or four games?
Yeah, he played 11 games for Leicester.
Did he finish his career too in the end anyway?
Real Oviedo.
That's mad.
He played 3 games for Real Oviedo after leaving Bradford City.
So am I right in thinking he was probably sold? This would have been around the time Fowler and Owen were coming through, surely.
Yes, yeah.
So he would have been sold because he was being pushed out, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And he was a Villa fan as well. So he wanted to join Villa because he's born and raised in Staffordshire, hence coming through at Stafford Rangers. But he's a Villa fan, but he never really did that much for us because he was always getting in trouble off the pitch, shall we say, and I'll leave it at that. But yeah, scored a lot for every other club he played for. It was just Villa. he didn't get many goals for. He didn't get many goals for Palace either. Palace, he only scored once in 20 games, but he was 19, I think, when he played at Palace. But yeah.
Just loaded up his Wikipedia page. Yeah, good. For Leicester, he had all right, didn't he?
Yeah.
5-11. No, that's not too bad.
Didn't keep him.
I did just scroll down to see his personal life. Yeah.
It's a long section.
2004 was an interesting year for Stan Collymore.
Yeah.
Where was he in 2004? Oh no, he was retired, was he?
Right. Yeah, he was retired. He was in Cannock Chase, actually, Chris. But,
are you sure?
Yeah.
Never heard of them before. What league are they in?
he obviously got in a lot of trouble off the pitch when he was at Villa, which meant his head wasn't in the game, I don't think. But
says he lost his job over this as well.
I imagine so.
He was on 5 Live and he got sacked.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
If you don't know, it's all on his Wikipedia page.
Yeah, go right to the bottom of his personal life. There's like 4 lines. And unfortunately for Collymore, it seems like that he ran into the wrong person while at Cannock Chase, who happened to be an undercover reporter. So, I don't know why the undercover reporter was there. Maybe he just got caught up in it and he just used his job as an excuse to be there.
Yeah. And it also answers the question of why he had a decent scoring record for Leicester, but during a team break in Spain, he set off a fire extinguisher during a night of drinking at the La Manga Club.
He's like the 90s version of Maribota. It says here that he suffered a broken nose after he was assaulted by 2 men in Birmingham, and then he was subsequently cautioned by manager Jim Jeffries at the time for being punched in the face.
Yeah. he got into all sorts of trouble. So, but he was a good goal scorer when he was actually sort of playing in the. I mean, obviously for Liverpool, he scored quite a lot of goals, but Nottingham Forest before that. And the reason that I brought him up was because of the FA Cup replays. He's been very vocal about keeping them for the.
He's never one to back down, is he?
No, he likes the voice in the pit.
What's he on now? Is he on Talk Sport now? Is he, or is he? I don't know.
He's on something like that now.
He definitely commentates somewhere because I always remember hearing his voice. But
yeah, he's particularly gone down well with Forest fans recently because he thinks they're being ridiculous with the message that they sent out on Twitter. But just another little fun fact about him: in 2005, in 2005, he played the character Kevin Franks in the film Basic Instinct 2 alongside Sharon Stone. Just there you go. He's been an actor as well.
Maybe his. I've never seen it, but I've heard about it. Maybe his antics in 2004 landed him the role.
Oh, quite possibly.
Maybe. Anyway, that's enough on Stan Collymore.
Yeah.
And his personal life. Anything else, Liam?
No, that's it from me.
So I guess this time next week we will have played our draw on Saturday night.
Yeah.
It can be 1-1, 2-2, 3-3 if you want. We'll even be 3-0 up and we'll let you come back to 3-0.
That would be nice.
And I'll get Nicholas Jackson to cup his ears at the Villa fans.
Yeah, thanks.
Anyway, all right, we'll be back next week.